you this morning. I can just say, when I first walked into this building, I just felt something very, very good. And I know it's God's Spirit that's among you. I talked to many people after the first service, and it is just amazing what we experience here as a family. Thank you, Alan and Teresa, for your hospitality, for hosting us. That is very, very special to us as well. As Alan said, we believe God has called us to the Navarre area to plant a church. We are under the Eco umbrella. As you sense, I don't speak with an Alabama accent, I speak with a South African accent. Born and raised in Cape Town, I got my training in Stellenbosch, and after 11 years ministry in South Africa, so many South Africans left the country. It was, they call it the brain drain. I went to Canada to the Presbyterian Church there, and I actually learned how to speak better English in Canada. And it has always been my African dream. We have dreams as well in Africa as well, is to serve God in America. I don't know why. God has put that in my heart. I needed to wait many years for that. But when something is special, it is worth the wait. This is my first opportunity to preach in any church in the United States. So that is why it's special to me. My wife has a way to make something special, and she said, you need to wear a suit. That is my way to honor you, to honor the occasion, and just to show you how meaningful this is for us. Now, when I went to Canada, lots of South African doctors, after the release of Nelson Mandela, went to Canada. So everywhere where I go, people will ask me, are you also a doctor? I said, yes, but only on a Sunday. I'm a specialist, I'm an anesthesiologist. So we'll see how it will work today. I want a special thanks to your pastor, Jason, as well. I met Jason a few times. And then through the missions committee, the partnership happened. And I didn't spend a lot of time with Jason, but what I heard from him and his presence, I'm very impressed with him. He also spent many years in Africa. And he's a very courageous man, because to invite a pastor that you don't know really very well to preach, he's very courageous. So you need to be very thankful for him, for his courage. He said that you're doing a series on Mark, and I said I would like to continue your series and not to have a gap in your series, because it's such a beautiful book. So our reading will be from Mark chapter 14, I think it's verse 22, but my focus will be a different part in the passage. I will not focus on the whole passage. So let us read together Matthew 14 from the English Standard Version, 26. And when they had sung a hymn,
and Jesus said to them, you will all fall away, for it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep will be scattered.
But after I am raised up,
I will go before you to Galilee.
Peter said to him,
even though they all fall away, I will not.
And Jesus said to him,
truly I tell you, this very night, before the rooster crows twice, you will deny me 3 times. But he said emphatically, if I must die with you, I will not deny you. And they all said the same.
And they went to a place called Gethsemane,
and he said to his disciples, sit here while I pray.
And he took with him Peter and James and John,
and began to be greatly distressed and troubled.
And he said to them,
my soul is very sorrowful, even to death. Remain here and watch.
And going to the upper room,
he fell on the ground and prayed later, if it were possible, the hour might pass from him.
And he said, Abba, Father,
all things are possible for you. Remove this cup from me. Yet not what I will, but what you will.
And he came and found the city This is the word of God.
Thanks be to God.
In 2010, there was a very, very good TED Talks, and that was done by Professor Brené Brown. She's from Houston, Texas. She's in sociology. She wrote 6 New York bestsellers. She has 2 podcasts. She's a big influencer. And she did a study many years ago, and that was her TED Talks, about what is the main thing that makes people successful in their relationships. Because we all know that we need intimacy in relationships, we all want healthy relationships, and that doesn't just come spontaneous. Something special needs to happen. And she studied about 3,000 couples. What is the one ingredient that makes their relationship good? And she coined it with one word. And do you know what that word was? Vulnerability. To be vulnerable. She said all the people that have good relationships had the ability to make themselves vulnerable. Because if you're willing to make yourself vulnerable in a relationship that is strong, you realize I will not be rejected. I can say how I feel. I can show my weaknesses. It will not be held against me. I can just be, because there is unconditional love. And if you cannot make yourself vulnerable, you cannot have a deep, meaningful relationship. Otherwise, you will still stay foreigners for one another. And I firmly believe she's right. Now, then I was thinking a little bit about what she said. And we know that God wants to have an intimate relationship with us. I remember when I started ministry in Canada in a small town, Wainwright, Alberta, I got a knock on the door, and it was a young student selling books for her school studies. And she asked me in a very polite way, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm a minister, I'm a pastor." Then she said, "You must be super religious." I said, "No, I hate it." She couldn't understand what I was saying. Then I used the opportunity to tell her, it's all about the relationship. Jesus didn't come with handouts of laws and regulations. It is about intimacy. It is about relationship. And then I was thinking what Brené Brown said about vulnerability. If it's true that Jesus wants intimacy with us, he also needs to be vulnerable. And when I went to university and I grew up, my dad was a pastor, we always heard that God is all powerful. God is ever present. God knows everything. It's all about, the power of God. But I never ever heard someone intentionally tell me that our God is a vulnerable God. Our God is vulnerable. You go to the 6th chapter of the Bible, Genesis 6, verse 6. God saw the wickedness of humanity. And what's the next part? It says, and he was grieved. There was pain in God's heart. So God is vulnerable. We can impact how God feels. And when you get to Mark chapter 14, it is actually a display of the humanity of Jesus. It's a display of his vulnerability. When you read it, I personally feel a little bit awkward. I actually kind of feel sorry. That he reveals him so much. And when we go to verse 32, if we can get it on the screen. Verse 32, I just want to show you the display of the vulnerability of Jesus. Why? Because his desire is a relationship, is intimacy. It says there, and when they went to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, sit here while I pray. And then the next verse says, and he took with him Peter, James, and John and began to be deeply, greatly distressed and very troubled. Next line, it says, and he said to them, look how deep he goes, my soul, my inner being is very sorrowful, even to death. You cannot be more vulnerable than that. Telling his disciples, he was their leader. He actually should show them that even before he was crucified, that he's cool, calm, and collected, because he's the Son of God. We went yesterday, we had the privilege to go to the Kennedy Space Center, and we went into the simulator, how to go to the moon. And I know it's not real, but I was a little bit scared. And then you realize the astronauts are trained to be calm, cool, and collected. But Jesus showed his real emotion. He was distressed. He was anxious. It says, sorrowful even to death, he told his disciples. So that is, as we say, it is the Gethsemane experience of Jesus. He was in his Gethsemane. Now, as human beings, we all have our Gethsemane experiences. It can be on a financial level, that you cannot sleep at night. How am I going to make it? It can be relational. You can have a Gethsemane experience in relationships. Kids can be bullied at school. They feel distressed, anxious. How am I going to make it through another school day because of what I experience? Churches go through their Gethsemane experiences. I know a lot of pastors. I have been through Gethsemane experiences in churches because there are people in churches. And when there are people, there are many times politics. So we know the experiences of Gethsemane. I remember my dad was a pastor as well, and many evenings I would hear him talk to my mom. I didn't know what it was about, but I realized it was heavy. It was a Gethsemane experience. Because when you work with people, you work with people who many times go through very difficult situations. And then you don't know what is the way out. Now, the question I want to ask this morning, what do you do when you experience Gethsemane? What do you do when you feel there's no way out? There are two things in this passage that stands out for me. The first one is when Jesus three times asked his disciples, please watch with me. Please be with me. He didn't ask them to bring him some water, nothing. Just be with me. And that's what Jesus actually wanted to ask them is, be present. The power of just being there. It reminds me of a book that I was reading many years ago. And I think the person is from Florida, Patrick Morley. He wrote many books. I think he was a real estate guy, but a wealthy guy. I can't remember anything in his book, but one thing I will never forget. A story that he told about himself ending up in hospital for a lengthy period. And every single day, he had one good friend that would come and visit him for 2 hours. And then one day he told his friend, he said, but you're a busy guy. Why do you come every single day? He said, I built every day in my calendar 2 hours hanging time, where I just hang out with people. And this is where the magic happens. When you hang out with your spouse in the kitchen, where you hang out with your kids, without any agenda, without any program, you are just there. Because the best way to show that you care is to be there. Job went through a very difficult time. And I believe you did a study on Job as well. Am I right? You did a study on Job. Where did Job got angry? When his friends, after 7 days, started to speak. Job was okay when they were just there. Because he felt their care. But when they started to tell him that is the reason why you're going through difficult times, he got angry at them and at God. So, a very good thing for us as Christians to realize is to be like Jesus. When you experience your Gethsemane, allow people into your life. Maybe you pray one evening and say, God, I don't know what to do anymore. And maybe the next morning you get a telephone call and a friend wants to take you out for coffee. He said, no, you're busy. No. Maybe it's God's answer to your call. You need to learn to be like Jesus, to allow people to keep watch with you and to make yourself vulnerable to people. Is it easy? No. Because we all had experiences of when people betrayed you. Jesus had those experiences as well. But you need to come to a point that you need to make yourself open to people speaking. That is the Gethsemane experience. And I work Mondays to Thursdays from 7 o'clock in the morning to 11 o'clock at the dealership, just to meet people. That's my main objective. And I can tell you, you just need to be there to realize that so many people are struggling with things that they hide from the world. And, you know, we all want churches to grow. One of a great way to grow a church is to become a friend. You don't need to talk about Jesus. Just be there. Because the world out there, look at the world and see people are busy, busy, busy. When I used to live in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, if people ask me, how are you? Oh, I'm not too busy. No, what's wrong? The enemy has helped us to buy into the lie that you can only have a meaningful life if you are busy. We need to become unbusy. When you read the stories of Jesus, where did it happen? When he was interrupted. He was never too busy. Most of the parables happen after an interruption. So, a great way, what we can do is to pray to God, God, show me how I can be that friend. You don't need to say anything. Just be there. Put in the effort. And I promise you, they will start talking about Jesus. You don't need to worry about it. I experienced it at work. I invited one guy to come to church, to our small church. We have 20 people if everyone is there. It was his very first time in his life that he entered a spiritual environment. He has no clue what the Bible is. He doesn't know who Jesus is. But he came. And I pray that he will come again. But you need to show that you care. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. We need to care. And it's not that difficult. You know, when you go to the hospital and visit people, or when someone passes away, sometimes people stay away because, what do I say? You don't need to say anything. Just be there. Because to be there is to care. It is the power of your presence. Jesus is Emmanuel, God with us. Just being present. Second thing we need to do, and this is what Jesus is saying then. Before I go to the second thing, before I forget, we did this passage in our group last week. And the one lady, she's a neighbor. She walked by one day and now she's part of our group. She said, I was born in Gethsemane. And we were all stunned. She said, my mother was an alcoholic. My dad was this. She said, yeah, I grew up with drugs. That's all I know. She was born in Gethsemane. And it's amazing what God can do to change the mess into a message. A trial into a triumph. A victim into a victor. God is able to do that. Second thing here. Three times Jesus asked them, watch over me. And then they disappointed Jesus. And then he prayed, Father, not my will. I know you can do anything, Jesus said. Please take this cup away, this journey. It's tough. But not my will, but your will. So that takes us to the second point. It means to surrender. Jesus was honest. God, it's difficult. Make a plan. But if you want me to go through this, I will. It is the power, not only of presence in the beginning, but it's the power of surrender. Now, to surrender is not a sign of weakness. It is actually a sign of strength. It is not easy to surrender, to let go. When I was in that simulator, I just have so much respect for those astronauts, because that journey is a journey of surrender. And when we got out, I saw in one of the plaques there a picture of an astronaut with his Bible open, displayed there. Proverbs 3 verse 5 and 6. Underline, trust in the Lord with all your heart and mind. Don't lean on your own understanding. Making all your ways known to God, and He will make your path straight. You can summarize those two verses with surrender. Trust God. Is it easy? No. Reminds me of a story in the Second World War in London, England, when they were bombed. And the father took his son to run out of the house because the bombs were just so close. And he knew close to the house was a hole that where they can hide. And he jumped into the hole, and his son was still standing on top. His dad said, "Jump." Then his son said, "Daddy, but I cannot see you." And with the bombs, you could see the light fired up, and the dad could see the silhouette of his son. He said, "Daddy can see you. Jump." And this is what it means to surrender. To trust the one that says, "Come, jump. Because I have you in my hands. Your name is written in the palm of my hands. I will never forsake you. God is a God of compassion. In God we can put our trust." So it's all about surrender. When you pray, it is probably the best way to show that you surrender. To pray is to surrender. It's like someone is in a boat and you take the anchor and throw it out to the shore. And what you do then is not, you don't bring the shore closer to the boat. The boat is coming closer to the shore. You say, "I'm not going to pull in the will of God to fit my will. It is my will that needs to surrender to the will of God." And what God wills for you is always the best, even if you don't understand it at that moment. The well-known singer Bono struggled very much with his faith, because wherever he went, people revered him. And he struggled, but how can I be a servant of Jesus? Then he realized, I need to be quiet. And he mentioned Elijah. You hear the voice of God, not in the thunder, not in the wind, but in the quiet. Then he said, and this is what Bono said, "I will surrender." Because to surrender is the antidote for me. Problems of the world is because of us, me. The middle letter of sin is I. We need to surrender. Jesus needs to become more and we need to become less. So the antidote for me is to surrender. How do I do that? Is to be like Jesus. Pray. Pray, make yourself vulnerable. Now, if you, as Presbyterians, if you shuffle the letters of Presbyterian, do you know what word do you get? Best in prayer. Check it out. Best in prayer. And if you add an S, I will not suggest that, you will get Britney Spears. So just write down Presbyterian. I want to conclude. A Presbyterian sermon has 3 points. I only have 2 this morning, but I have a 3rd one. The first one is that you need to be present. Allow people into your life, the power of presence. The 2nd point is surrender. Surrender. The third point is, it helps nothing to hear the word if you don't do it. So I want to challenge you. That's the third point. To take action and to ask God to put someone in your path, a name in your heart, and just reach out to that person. And maybe that person is your pastor and say, I will pray for you. I remember my dad went through a tough time one day. The guy gave him a hard time. My dad was relaxed. And he asked the guy, have you prayed for me? Have you prayed for me? The world needs us. Many people are born in Gethsemane. They're still there. Go in there and keep watch with them. Amen.